morning, everyone. If you're to the left, please move over to the right so you can see Jim and all his glamour here in a few minutes. But I'm Alan Miller with OTS Media, WRHI, and CN2. And on behalf of the RHEDC Placemaking Committee, the City of Rock Hill, and Jim Shore and his great staff, we welcome you to this huge day for downtown Rock Hill. Like anything big, takes a lot of time and people working closely for a common goal. So we thank all of you who work behind the scenes getting to this point and making this day possible. Rock Hill's effort to partner with Jim Shore started about 8 years ago after he made his first Christmasville appearance. Everything from COVID to the availability of appropriate buildings to competition with other cities slowed the progress. But just in a few minutes, the mayor is going to share with you the power of the three P's: persistence, patience, and willing parties. The WRHI family first met Jim Shore about 35 years ago when he was a struggling artist living in Heath Springs, and it was initially through a business relationship we had with his in-laws, Kitty and Bill Crenshaw. They were great people, individuals that we loved dearly. I remember Kitty constantly bringing up Jim's name during conversation, telling us how great of an artist he was and how unique he was. And she would always ask if there was anything we could do to help promote him. Well, we met his family and soon realized that they all believed in Jim's dream. His wife, Jan, his children, his grandchildren, his cousins, his uncles, his aunts, anybody. Everyone was rallying around him to help advance his art. Jim was creating the art, and his family was helping him manufacture, promote, and sell the creations. And during Christmas, for many years, Manning, you'll remember this, Kitty and Bill would visit the radio station, and they would gift Manning and I with a unique Santa Claus figurine that Jim had created. A lot of these probably are one of a kind. Manning and I were limited to how much we could promote Jim, but we helped as we could. We interviewed Jim on Straight Talk many times, and we promoted his appearances at area craft shows, festivals, anything that was going on. We do that during our regular news and music programs. I remember when I became Come See Me chairman back in the 1990s, I wanted to give our team leaders something special, something unique for their contributions to our great festival. Thinking Jim was still a struggling artist, I called Kitty and I said, can you contact Jim, have him give me a call, see if he's interested in a job creating a figurine using the Vernon Grant image that I had picked for the logo for that year. I felt I could help him out by hiring this tough guy over here who was had not made it yet. And so I offered him a commission, and I placed a big order of 25 of his figurines to give to all of our volunteers, of course. Little did I know that by that time, Jim had established his own brand and gained a good amount of traction from his unique style of angel and Santa images under the branding name of Heartwood Creek. And even more importantly, he was also in the process of signing a production agreement with UNESCO, an international leader in the gift industry. And soon, he would be producing individual images that were well into the thousands for each piece. You're probably wondering, did Jim get back with me? Jim, he got back with me. He sure did, and said he would be happy to custom design, paint, and put a special Glenda Frog together for me. And it seems I paid him a whopping $250 for the 25 figurines. Jim, you did a great job, and all of my team leaders that served that year received a very unique piece of art. I've got mine right here. and I keep it in my office. Every day I show it off to anybody that comes by. And we want to thank you, and thank you for giving us this piece of art. And we're going to give this to you for your own museum here, since you don't have a copy of the original, since you only made 25. But we thank you for this. We thank you for your longtime friendships. I got another one, so I'm not kidding. After signing with UNESCO, didn't take long for the rest of America to discover Jim Shore. Within a few years, Jim had signed contracts, licensing agreements with Walt Disney, Peanuts, The Grinch, Warner Brothers, Hanna-Barbera, Harry Potter, The Elf, Coca-Cola, of course, Wizard of Oz, and so many more. Many more than I can mention today. But today, Jim's distinctive style of combining traditional images with vibrant colors, blends of American and European folk art with quilting and toll painting, has resulted in a phenomenal international industry. Millions of fans from around the world now collect his thousands of figurines and other art pieces. Jim appears on a regular basis, almost monthly, on the QVC shopping network, where he debuts and showcases his newest products. Jim has received numerous awards, including multiple Art of the Year awards and the prestigious Icon Honors Life Accomplishment Award. Jim, all of us are excited for both you and the city of Rock Hill, and thankful that you chose to bring all of this together right here in Rock Hill. And now to share the big news that all of you have gathered to hear as one of America's hardest working mayors, please welcome the Honorable John Geddes.
Thank you and welcome. It's always a pleasure to celebrate great things happening in Rock Hill. And today it's important for us to take just a second and think about the word character, the character of our downtown. You can't go downtown and look at the buildings at Citizens Bank, at Freedom Building, at so many other buildings that we've retained and we've refurbished and we've seen brought back to life generation after generation after generation. The character of our town, our downtown especially, is really what makes us unique as so many others in our region. It's one of the draws, I think, for Jim Shore to come to downtown Rock Hill. And in downtown Rock Hill, along with character, we have characters. We have characters like Chef Rob, Sarah Vining, we have Johnny Barnes. We have so many people that bring so much to our vitality downtown because of their oversized personalities and their willingness and passion to engage in our mutual success here in Rock Hill, especially in the downtown area of Rock Hill. Today we celebrate another character, or another person with character. Jim Shore's been offered opportunities to open up something similar to what he's building here in Orlando, Florida, in Branson, Missouri, in Tennessee, right next door or across the street from Graceland. But his heart is in South Carolina. He grew up and was raised in York, lives now out on Lake Wylie. And as he said many times, when he comes across that state line and he sees "Welcome to South Carolina," he knows that he's happy again. He knows he's back home with his kinfolk, back home where it all began, but much more importantly, where his promise lies, to continue to pick us up as people. His character is what brings him here today. And he will be a character for someone else to play with in the downtown, with the people who I've named before and so many others, like Antonio Barnes and JP, and of course, the great Leland Greeley. You know, it's that cast of characters that will celebrate the people and their vision and what they want to do. And here, Jim's character and his characters are going to revolutionize this part of Hampton Street. They're going to make this an immersive experience so that you can have a gallery to come into, see his life's work, that he's accomplished and that he will accomplish. And it'll be ours to share, ours to walk through and enjoy that immersive experience. So we're very excited today to introduce Jim to the community at large for those that may not know his artwork. We're very excited today to see and to celebrate his investment in downtown in Rock Hill, to see us take it to another level, to see it fit this mosaic that we've built here in downtown Rock Hill and our city as a whole, to add to it, to lift us all up, and to continue to lead us forward together. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jim Shore to share us his vision for downtown Rock Hill.
Hello, everyone. I was prepared to tell you everything that Alan and the mayor just told you, but okay, so thank you all for coming. It's an absolute honor and a privilege to be on this, the beginning of this journey. And I'm really glad that everyone showed up at this point in the process, because you get to take a close firsthand look at what we're starting with. So we're all together on the ground floor of what I think is going to be a very, very exciting and mutually symbiotic relationship. And we could not be happier to be able to do it in my hometown, my stomping grounds, you know. I was raised in York, and like the mayor said, we've been offered the opportunity to do something similar to this in a lot of different locations. And I thought, okay, Orlando? Well, I'm not Floridian. I'm not from Missouri. I'm not from Tennessee. I'm from South Carolina. I love this state and I love this community. I love York. And I love the growing up here. It was just a wonderful place to grow up. And I thought there would be no more fitting place to display my life's work and share it with the people that mean so much to me than York County, and right here in Rock Hill. Now, I've been doing artwork in one form or another for most of my life. In the last several decades, the mayor pointed out, I've been licensing my artwork to a company in Chicago, Inesco, and they are the largest and leading distributor of artwork in the gift industry in the world. And so it's been it's one of those things. Actually, it came about almost by accident, you know. Jan and I were at one time doing my artwork in Hee Springs, South Carolina, in a company that we started called Designs Americana. And we were doing our casting and everything right here in South Carolina. And we had grown the company from our starting point, which when we started, and we decided, okay, we're gonna live our lives as artists. Simple, easy, you know. Actually, the fact of the matter is people tell you that, you know, all the starving artist things, and you can't make a living as an artist. For the most part, they're absolutely right. It's no cakewalk. Why? Because there are just so many talented artists out there, and there's a lot of competition. There's artists out there actually more talented than me. Can't think of any right off, but we were living actually at the time in a mule shed in the Hee Springs, South Carolina, that we had converted into a little cottage. And you could still from time to time tell you were living in a mule shed. But we started there, and within 3 years, we had 355 employees, and we were one of the largest casting houses in North America, based on casting my artwork. But there was so much involvement in the business side of it, you know, the oxygen had just been sucked out of the room as far as the creative part of it. That's why we put that business to bed and decided to do licensing. So the first thing we did, we got together some of the pieces I had sculpted, the castings that I had made, and my design book, and we took off for Chicago, figuring we would start at the top and work our way down as we were progressively rejected. I stopped in Chicago and went to a phone booth. That sort of tells you about the time period, and made a cold call to Inesco. And I talked to somebody in product development, and they immediately rejected me. They said, we haven't got time for this. We talk to people like you all the time that want to be, you know, claim to be artists and all this sort of thing. So they were preparing for a pre-show or something, so they said, well, we just can't see you. Well, that was a slap in the face. You could have knocked me over with a feather. I said, surely they want, you know, to at least talk to me, you know. I had Designs Americana. They had no idea who Jim Shore was and could care less, you know. Well, I begged. I groveled. I did everything short of prostrating myself, which isn't easy in a phone booth, let me tell you. I was pathetic enough that they said, okay, you can come in. We'll give you 10 minutes in the lobby. So I said, hey, we're in the door, you know. I go to the lobby and check in with them. They sent down a fella named Steve Smock, who wasn't actually an Inesco employee. He was just a freelancer there. His first words to me was, hello, I'm Steve Smock. They sent me down here to get rid of you. You've got 10 minutes. Well, and those were his exact words, actually. I have them engraved on a plaque. So I started showing him the pieces that I had sculpted and examples that I had brought. And I finally handed him my design book. He looks at it, and I have to admit the designs were pretty good. And so he says, you know, we need to take this up to the conference room and spread this out on the table so that we can get a better look at it, you know. I said, that's more than 10 minutes. So anyway, they spread it out, and he called in the head of product development, and then the head of sales, and the head of marketing, and one of the vice presidents in charge of what they called milieu, which is a fancy French word for decor, I think. And so before I knew it, I mean, there was a whole room full of people in this conference room looking at all these designs that I'd done, okay? Well, they said, you know, who did this? Well, they said, that guy on the corner over there, you know? And so, long story short, by the end of the day, we had a deal memo for a contract. So that was the beginning of getting us in the door as designers licensed to the biggest distributor in the world. So I felt like I was pretty much hot stuff at the time, you know? Okay, so I started doing design work initially was decorative garden. When we had Designs Americana, largely seasonal figurines, similar to what I do now, sort of, and it was primarily Santas and, you know, things like that. And so one day one of the vice presidents named Kathy Cook came, and she said, you know, if you could design a Santa for us that would be original and different and exciting and, you know, because I know of your background in South Carolina with Designs Americana. I knew about that. I said, you know, Ms. Cook, I said, that's a wonderful idea. I think that's impossible. Why? Because I personally have done hundreds of Santas. Hundreds of artists have done hundreds of Santas for hundreds of years, so it's all been done. However, apart from my normal artistic style, my natural artistic style, which if I'm painting or if I'm some of the sculpture that I've done, I'm looking for photographic realism. But my favorite styling is folk art. Why? Because it is highly creative. It is charming. It's innocent. Because it's done by people who, they're not looking for commissions or gallery showings or anything like that. They're just doing something that they think is going to be pretty, something to make them happy. And a lot of it was based on a memory of European art. So it morphed into, you know, we different iterations. Obviously, the quilt patterning that we do and the rose modeling became Pennsylvania Dutch, and it's that sort of slightly primitive version of European artwork. I thought, okay, I like that. I like Santas. Santas are red and green. What if I combined the two? Okay, so I went back to the studio. And normally, the product development process today takes from the time the concept is first floated through our brainstorming sessions until it's actually something you can put on the shelf is sometimes 8 months to a year. I did that first grouping of seven Santas in 3 days because I already knew about casting and all that stuff, so that was a breeze. So I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to do seven Santa Clauses, and I'm going to, because I know I can do a cool Santa Claus, and then I'm going to decorate them with scenes and with motif of, which is another art word, okay, that would be nothing to do with Christmas, nothing to do with Santa, but it would have to do with all these folk art elements. Well, I did that, and it actually it surprised me how good they looked. I submitted them to that, and they went nuts over it initially because it was so original. See, it's very recognizable now, man, because I've done thousands of pieces. But back then, I mean, it was like, wow, that's brand new. It was first shown at the Philadelphia trade show, Philadelphia gift show, and Inesco had a huge showroom there. And when I arrived to go to the showroom, it was so packed, I couldn't get in. One of the salesmen came out and said, you know, people are going nuts in there over that stuff. I said, there are people that come to me and say, I don't know what's in there, but I'll take three dozen of them, you know? So that was the beginning of Heartwood Creek. Shortly thereafter, Inesco called me up and they said, Disney wants to talk to you. I said, why? You know, I haven't done anything to Disney. I said, no, they have an idea that they want to, we don't even know what it is, but they need to talk to you. Can you travel? Well, yeah, I mean, you know, had nothing else to do. They said, well, there will be a limousine in your front yard in 1 hour. The first thing I did is I called everybody in the neighborhood and I said, look what's going to be in the front yard in an hour. So they took me to the airport and had chartered a private jet to take me out to Burbank, California. So, I mean, I'm like, you know, I didn't know what to think. I talked, when I got out there, I talked to a man named David Pachinko of Disney, who was their head of their design department. He's on their wall of fame. He is the top of the top. Well, I didn't know who he was, but he knew all about me. He had collected my artwork and was very familiar with my style, and he thought the idea, since I combined so successfully the folk art motif with these other subjects, he said that would work well on our characters. However, Disney at the time did not permit any deviation whatsoever to any of their brand items, including color. There's a Pantone designated color called Mickey Red, okay? And so that's how they are, you know? But he said he felt so strongly about this that he wanted to give it a try, so he got the green light from the very top of the Inesco people all the way down to give this a try. And he said, are you willing to do that? I thought about it. Took me about, maybe a second and a half. And I said, heck yeah, you know, I'm all in. So I went back once again to my studio and I created, in a couple of days, three iconic Disney characters and then decorated them just like I had done with Heartwood Creek. I sent them back out there to Disney, and immediately I got a call back saying, come back out, and we'll put together a whole program. And that was the beginning of the first co-brand that that I did. And that's one of the things I think that that started the line being taken seriously within the industry, because based on that, we got the invitation to do Rudolph, that was next. And, oh, by the way, when they said Rudolph, I said, you know, I don't know, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, I don't know. I'll give it a try. Somebody will buy it, you know. Well, we did a rollout on QVC, okay? First time it'd been shown. I was still apprehensive about it. We took it out to do a line evaluation before the show to familiarize the host or the hostess with what we're showing. As soon as the host saw it, she said, I want to be a dentist. So that's one of the big lines, and I didn't get a reaction on that the way I normally do. I guess you all are not terribly familiar with that story. Okay, that's one of the things that Hermie in the story wanted to be a dentist. Anyway, when she said that, I said, okay, I think it's got legs. Well, that became also one of the biggest co-brands, and on the heels of that, we've as Alan had mentioned, that the litany of the all the co-brands, which include Coca-Cola and Warner Brothers and Gone with the Wind and Harry Potter, and we have 19 of them, and so has been a huge part of the line. And so what we've done is we have accumulated examples of the artwork, and it right now numbers about a little better than 15,000 pieces and 17,000 drawings and paintings. So we have a lot of content. And the idea early on was to say, hey, let's share this. Let's share this with the people that are enthusiastic about my artwork, but we need a place, you know? So we started thinking, and actually, some of the ideas that sort of got the thing rolling came from Alan and Manny and these important movers and shakers, and then of course we've got the support of our wonderful mayor and so many others that will help make this thing a reality. And so when we started thinking about it, you know, we've talked about these other places, and settling here on this building, I think one of the nicest things about the thought of what we are about to achieve is the fact that this building is going to be saved. And that is, I think, one of the most outstanding things about what's happening in Rock Hill, you know? When I was growing up, Rock Hill was kind of a sleepy little southern town, you know? And it has, through proper guidance, and I want to thank everybody who's had a hand in that, mainly because you had the good sense not to tear things down and replace them with stainless steel and glass, but to recognize what you had historically and to bring these things back to life. So what have you got here? You've got a magnificent starting point for an elegant example of a southern town done the right way, you know, with Fountain Park and the involvement of the Barnes and the Normans and the people that are just making this place so wonderful, you know, and the folks at Ecclesia, which have had such a big hand in refurbishing, you know, some of these older buildings and everything. So it's an absolute delight to be here with the restaurants and the museums, the children's museums over here, Comporium Museum there. You've got Vernon Grant, who was such a, you know, a wonderful artist and has, you know, made such wonderful in his day contributions to, you know, to everything. And you've got the Nature Museum out there, just things that are just wonderful that are happening and will happen, will continue to happen because of the plans that I've sort of been privy to is what the development going forward. And we are hopeful that we will be a big part of it, because what we want to do is we want to be a not just a museum here, you know, or a gallery here. We want to be an integral part of Rock Hill, and we want to share in everything, and that includes Christmasville and Come See Me and everything on a daily basis. Because one of the things we're going to do, and I'll give you a, kind of a rundown of how we sort of envision what we're going to do with this building. This we have this building, that building, and then the next building. It's the whole thing up and down. It's basically 22,000 square feet. And down here we will have a quilt shop, because that's an integral part of our design, and we've got a significant collection of that, and we love the quilters because of that. We'll have the gift shop. We'll have a gallery that will be open to local artists to display their work, and that sort of thing. So most of the bottom here will be merchandising like that. And then the upper part will be the museum proper. And what that will be, we will create a stroll through a village that will be an experience that will be transitioning from one type of motif, whether it be Victorian or whether it be colonial or whether it be Whoville or the, you know, the dark Halloween area and that sort of thing. As you go through the village, it will be more than just a, you know, display rack after display rack of my artwork. My artwork will be a part of the experience that we will create. We'll have digital immersion experiences and that sort throughout. There'll be sound and there'll be color and there'll be light and there'll be life. And it will be an experience, I think, that we can all share. And we'll get started on it. We'll get started on it immediately. As soon as y'all clear out, we're going to get started. Okay? We'll start out with creating this or taking this back to a blank slate, and then away we go. Okay, and we'll keep you all posted on the progress that we'll be making, so that we can have interaction constantly between us, the community, and everything, because it's not us, it's you, okay? That's why we're doing this, and a lot of the interaction and the proceeds and so forth through our foundation will go towards our love and respect for our military, our first responders, and the children, through the children's hospitals, Military Families Association, and those things that we support. That's what this museum will go to support too. So anyway, thank you all for being here once again. If there's any questions that you want to pose or something, I'll be walking around. And if you all want to see what else we have here to start with, and I warn you, it's rough, but I'll tell you, it's the best way to start the beginning of this journey together, because you'll see what we got to start with, and then you'll see what we end up with. So thank you once again. The question was, how would we go about supporting local artists, as I mentioned, you know, setting up a gallery where local artists can come. Now, right now, to tell you the truth, I'm not totally sure what the overall mechanism is. Sometimes things like that are juried. So, you might have a lot of presentations and, you know, finite amount of space to deal with, but it'll be conducted like any other gallery as far as, you know, commission work and that kind of thing, because quite frankly, I mean, one of the most difficult things that artists face is how to actually get your artwork out there and to make a living. But I guess even more importantly is to get it out there to so that you can create a name and a reputation and all that kind of stuff. And a good way to do that is gallery show, and that's what we're going to do. Manny.
Jim, this is no small undertaking. It's huge, 22,000 square feet.
Yes.
Two questions. Number one, what is your timetable on this thing? And how big of an investment is it?
Well, the timetable, it's one of those things where, you can be optimistic about time and think, things sometimes run longer than you want. I would like to have this thing ready for a grand opening month by third quarter of next year, roughly a year or slightly better than a year going into the Christmas season. That's kind of what we're shooting for, As far as who's going to show up, I have no idea. Now, we've got a pretty respectable following worldwide. I did a signing recently in Australia, for example, and we did the first one at Melbourne, and it was a two-hour signing, okay? Went from noon till two. We had over 1,000 people show up, and it went for 9 hours. That's in Australia, okay? In Melbourne, Australia, if you're going to Australia and you go any farther, you're coming back, okay? So we have a lot on QVC. Our buyership on QVC, those that actually buy our product on a regular basis, numbers 406,000 buyers. So you can see the scale of what our following is pretty respectable. So if we do a clarion call for everyone, come see us, and spend a little bit of time at the museum and enjoy Rock Hill and everything that Rock Hill has to offer, which is sizable. I have no idea how many people show up. It might be scary. As far as the outlay, since we've got the potential contractors here, I'll hold their feet to the fire, don't worry. It'll be a several million dollar investment for sure, because we're going to do everything top notch. We will not hold back, and it'll be a first class operation when we get finished with it. Anything else? Gee, I must have covered things pretty well. All right, well, once again, thank you all so much.